Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and I'm bringing you the only podcast that's live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via the capital city of Columbus, Ohio. How y'all doing out there? I'm doing pretty good. Can't complain. I mean, weather's finally getting a little bit better. I'm feeling much, much better than I have in previous installments. And with that being said, man, let's just jump right on into it. My guest on this episode, the 66th edition, oh man. There were some times I didn't think I'd get to 20, let alone 66. But, nonetheless, the man that is going to sit down with me is a gentleman by the name of Steve Steiner. Please, please, don't get confused. I didn't say Scott Steiner. I actually think I would be afraid to actually have him on this podcast, to be honest with you. But Steve Steiner. Steve is a local comic book enthusiast, comic book creator. I met him at Extra Space when I picked up one of his absolutely funny books called Vulgar and Tasteless Star Wars Parodies. And, you know, if you love Star Wars, you know, it dives into some really, some really weird things, like the Emperor being a perverted old man, Han Solo maybe having sex with dead Tauntauns, Chewbacca nailing your sister, funny stuff like that. And I became automatically just enamored with it. And while talking with him, I talked to him about coming on the podcast, and he actually ended up shooting me an email and saying that he listened to a couple episodes. He really thought it was fun, and he really enjoyed it. So he wanted to come on, and I was happy to have him on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and when I come out of that break, we're going to go right into my conversation with Mr. Steve Steiner. Hey there, do you need a website? Maybe for your business or for your own personal use? Then you need to check out Bluehost.com. It's the web hosting service I, John Orlando, use for PVDcast.com. They've got great, helpful people. In fact, I've had some problems, and all I've done is chatted or called those folks, and bam, problem fixed. They've even got some great pricing, too, which, I mean, I won't talk about that, because all you got to do is go over to Bluehost.com, and you can find out all the information that you need. Take it from me. They're the best out there. Go to Bluehost.com to get all the details. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of the PVD Cast. You know me. John Orlando here. I'm sitting down with a gentleman by the name of Steve Steiner. Steve, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Well, let's talk about it. You're the man behind Mullet Turtle Comics.
Yep, Mullet Turtle Comics.
Where'd you come up with that title? Like, that's the first question I'm just coming up with. How did you get that Mullet Turtle? Is quite a tongue twister.
And, you know, surprisingly, I haven't been asked more questions about my title of my comics. I don't know. I just had this cool little illustration of a turtle with a mullet. And, you know, and I was looking around. It's like, oh, I'm making all these comics. I need to form something to some kind of banner to put them under. And like Mullet Turtle Comics, man, that'll get somebody to at least chuckle at it, I guess.
All right. But let's talk a little bit about Mullet Turtle Comics. Yeah. They're all self-produced, correct?
Yep.
You're
writer,
the man.
Writer and artist. And my wife is a proofreader and, She tells me if they're funny or not, usually, and sometimes I listen, sometimes I don't, you know.
All right.
Sometimes I say, no, it's going as is.
So what inspired you to start this particular endeavor?
I just got a lot of ideas. Like, okay. I don't know, you know, I've always liked comics, you know, growing up, you know, the first thing I got into comics was, I don't know if anybody even remembers, these Marvel trading cards. And, you know, I was like in second, third grade. They had these cool trading cards. I didn't even know what comics were, to tell you. You know, like, I kind of knew amorphously, but, you know, that's how I learned about Spider-Man and Wolverine and all these cool characters were the Marvel trading cards. And then I started buying comics because of them. And just always liked it because you could, like, you didn't have to, like, you could do them by yourself. Like, I didn't need to rely, like, some of my friends, and they were all kind of flaky, you know. We'd like, oh, let's make a comic. And they were all flaky, and they'd all, like, kind of, you know, stop. And, you know, I wouldn't. So I kind of went off on my own and just, you know, started making characters and all through high school and then just kept doing it. I don't know. I just got a lot of ideas to get out of my head. So that's what I do now.
But, you know, off air you did say that your job is very artistic itself, correct? Your day job, shall we call
it,
whatever.
Yeah, you know, I'm a designer for the major paper here in Columbus.
Okay.
All right. And, you know, it's creative, but it's not creative enough. Right, that makes sense.
I get you, but my segue was that my segue was that you went to CCAD, you received some formal training, because I always find that interesting that those folks that are passionate about something and they maybe learn it as they go, so to speak, rather than going and not that I'm putting you down, what I'm saying. I'm just saying I always find it interesting somebody's background about how they got from point A to point B,
Yeah, I don't know. There was a point, where I kind of stopped making comics.
Really?
And, yeah, like, I was in art school, and, they tell you to do things a certain way. And then I just got to the point where it's like, I'm just not enjoying it. It wasn't what I wanted to do. So I just started, making little photocopied comics and giving it out to my friends. And, people would laugh at it. And I just kept growing. And then, I guess we didn't talk about this off air, but I actually have worked for a little bit for DC. Like, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I do have... Right,
toot away, my friend. Toot away.
Well, DC, they had this thing called Zuda Comics. It was an imprint that is now dead.
Okay. I was going to say, Steve, I'm going to be honest, I'm hard-pressed to remember
exactly,
that title.
Yeah,
okay.
Nobody... Right. And it was... What it was, it only lasted a couple years, and what it was their foray into web comics. And what, okay. And what they did, they had a setup where there'd be every month there'd be 10, there'd be 10 competitors, quote unquote. There'd be 10 comics, 8 pages each, and people would vote on it. And their whole kind of business plan was, oh, and you got paid for this too, to be in. It was like $500 to just be a competitor, and whoever won got a contract for a full, they called them seasons, mm-hmm. like a season of comics. It was like 60, like about 60 comics pages altogether. And their marketing was, all these competitors will go out and, like, tell their friends, and, some of them were semi-pro. I was just a guy, in my, living by myself making comics at the time, and I'm like, just a fluke, I just tried it. And lo and behold, I got in, and it was pretty sweet. I'm like, I went, and I got a check in the mail for $500 from DC Comics, and I went and I photocopied it, so I'd always have a copy of it.
Like, it's framed? Is it framed?
It's
in
not
the house?
Framed.
Oh, okay.
It's not framed. It's somewhere in a pile of crap somewhere. I don't even know where it is, to tell you the truth. But I know I photocopied it, and I was like, and that's when I saw, like, all right, I can get good at this. Like, this isn't even my best stuff.
Now, were you in CCAD, or you were already graduated from there?
I was already graduated. Okay. I was. All right. This would have been, about 2007, 2008?
Okay.
And, of course, I didn't win. I came in, like, seventh place. But I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this again. So I made another comic. Got in. I'm like, cool, another $500, Didn't win that one. So I'm like, all right, I got two in. Let's see if I can get three in. So I got a third one in. And another $500. And then I started getting noticed. The cool thing I liked about Zuda was kind of like a community. Like, that's the cool thing about the internet.
Right.
Communities forming and growing, and I started getting to know all these people, and it, like I said, I was like in a small town of Pennsylvania, not a lot of comics people around me, so that's kind of like how I got my fix. And then a couple of the other guys that had also been in the competition, they asked me to color a comic, and we actually won that one, so I can say I did color 60 pages for DC Comics.
All
right. And then right when I was, I actually went to New York and met, like, the people in charge of it, which was pretty cool, and got a tour of their, I guess it's California now, but their old building.
Yes, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And, of course, I forgot a camera, so there's no evidence I was ever there. It was looking like I was actually going to get my own series, and then it went defunct. The publisher was out, Paul Levitz, I think was the old publisher's name, and they got Jim Lee and the other two guys in there, and it all
Dido is it,
yeah,
Dido,
yeah,
Dido, Dido,
and I guess there was politics. They didn't tell me a lot, but from what the people kind of told me, there was some politics, like these new guys didn't like, and I could kind of see the writing on the wall. So it only lasted like 3 years.
Okay.
Like, I think 2010 it ended.
So it was kind of, it was somewhat like a reality show, if you will, like a competition.
Yeah,
reality,
it was
kind of
like an American Idol. I know there's like a small press idol out there, and there's been kind of other similar things,
mm-hmm.
That they probably copied off of. They probably were not, they were definitely not the first to do this.
Sure,
format.
Yeah, of course not.
So,
of course not.
But yeah, it was pretty cool, format. And then, just started, like, I got all this material laying around. I got to start publishing, and then I just got more ideas. And
growing up, were you a DC Comics guy?
Not until I was in high school.
Really?
It was always Marvel. Then I'll tell you what did it was Kingdom Come by Mark Waid and Alex Ross.
Oh yeah,
because I was big. You know, Alex Ross was
he's the man.
The everything in the 90s.
He's the man. You know,
he was it. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna check this out. I'm not a big DC fan. And that's actually what we got. Like, wow, Batman's actually pretty cool. Like, Superman's pretty sweet. And so I started getting. And then JLA by Grant Morrison came out, and I was real big into that. You know, like the first year of it, pretty much. And then, like I said, once I got into college, you know, plus I didn't have a lot of money, so I kind of got out of it. You know, most comics, but this Zuda actually got me back. You know, reading back into it, and it's really, you know, I want to say I'm almost jealous that I'm not growing up in this awesome time for comics. Like, you can get, there's so many, like, in the 90s, there didn't seem to be, like, a lot of alternative voices. Like Bone. Bone was such, like, a twist for everybody, because it was, like, this successful, you know, out-of-nowhere comic. And, like, Cerebus was another alternative. But there wasn't, like, at least in my comic store, there wasn't a lot of alternatives. And, of course, you know, the internet wasn't as big or
I'm in the I'm in the same boat as you, because you're only a couple years younger than me, and I'm in the same boat as you. If you would have asked me, you know, during that heyday in my local comic book shop, indies,
there's like hardly anything, hardly really.
And
so that's kind of my passion now, just trying to find, you know, just different stuff, like all these indie people, you know, websites, and, you know, I'll even admit on air, I do pirate comics only for the sake of looking at their drawings to see if it's cool. You know, if it's cool enough, I'm, you know, I go buy it, you know.
Okay.
So you can judge me if you can. Some people do judge me, but, you know, like, I flip through it and I'm like, eh, you know, and I just throw it in the trash. It's not like something I share or anything.
All right. Well,
but to me,
just remember, when Interpol comes and arrests you, you're the one that admitted to this.
That's
live.
Right.
I admitted it.
I'm unabashed about it. But, you know, as far as a creator, it's not the worst thing that can happen. Like, to get your work out there. As far as small independent guy, you know, it's not like I'm trying to take advantage of other small creators by it. And, you know, people want to pirate some of my stuff and they enjoy it, you know. That's how you get customers in this day and age for internet.
What do you say the biggest disadvantage is about being an indie guy?
Oh, you got to do it all. Like,
that's the big pet peeve. That's the number one con.
And that's the thing I'm not good at. You know, I'm good. I like to make them. Not always very vocal about the marketing or like, hey, you should check this out, or like, why, you know, trying to find that audience,
right?
You know,
sure.
And I also decided, you know, I've tried different, like Zuda again was a webcomic thing. You know, I've tried other webcomics, and I'm a print guy. I just love, you know, like I said, I work at a newspaper, love print, always loved print. You know, even, like, there's nothing like hand stapling your own comic.
It makes sense.
And then
it
you
makes
have
sense,
it,
yeah.
And you're like, wow, look at this. I made this.
Exactly.
You know? You know, and, you know, I have some web comics. I have one about a crocodile man. He was on my Zuda.
Which I have on my list of things to discuss, by the way.
Okay, but, okay. Cool.
Okay, so that's the negatives. What's the number one pro about being an indie guy?
Freedom.
Freedom to do whatever you want.
I can do whatever I want. You know, I sent you one. I'm pretty proud of this one. I sent you one. It's not really a comic per se. It's more of like a twisted humor book. It's called Facts About the Weather and Why My Whore Wife Left Me. And and it's like, it's probably the first thing my wife actually kind of questioned my mindset on. You know, it's the first thing I've made that my wife actually questioned, you know, my mindset on. Like, she's like, do you think, you know, are you planning on leaving me? And I'm like, no, hon. I just had this weird idea, you know, when I was drunk one day, actually. And, and you know, and it just kind of like, it's just something I had to see through. And it's kind of like, it's kind of like this guy. Well,
let's talk about it. Because
sure,
it's
yeah.
my list to talk about it.
Yeah.
I was saving it for last. I won't lie, Steve, because I thought that was the best. So, facts about the weather. You want to give a quick synopsis of what it was? I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh,
give a quick synopsis of what it was.
It's kind of like from the mindset of an 80s, like late 80s textbook, you know, when I was in elementary school.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, and this guy that worked for the textbook, like a designer for the textbook company, was going through a rough divorce, and he started writing shit about his wife in the textbook, and it went to print, you know, through a mishap. And so this is, and they burned the book. That's kind of like, I don't want to say gimmick, but that's kind of thing. They burned all the books. This is the last copy. And it's the guy, he saved it as a child from the bonfire, and he's reprinting it. And so it goes in, and I try to set it up just like a textbook. And my wife, she actually said it was too good because she thought people were going to think I just stole photos out of a textbook.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask about because it is really slickly designed.
It's all stock photography I had saved or
really?
You know, found royalty free stuff. That I, you know, Photoshop, you know, you got to put like the dots on it, like you sure. scanned it in, and, you know, put like a burn texture on it, you know, just Photoshop stuff.
And I mean, it's 100% straight up honest. It looks like a textbook. That's the coolest part about it is it looks like a textbook that, yes, was burned. It's singed on the edges, but it looks so much like those textbooks from the 80s, man.
I had reference. She actually had... I don't know. She's from West Virginia. I don't know if this is a practice.
So your wife has a textbook?
She actually had like three textbooks from the 80s, which is, you know, you get the little, what do they call it in the front where you like write your name? There's like a stamp they put. You
yeah,
write your
it's
name.
The property of.
Yeah, property of. And it has like, you know, the old, everybody, you know, 1991, 1992. She actually had that, you know, and I scanned that in. I'm like, cool. Why they let them take their textbooks home and never return them, I don't know what the thing is in West Virginia. like I started calling around places, you know, like Half-Price Books, you know, different places around town to see if they had textbooks, you know, and I told her my idea. She's like, oh, I have some at my parents' house. And I'm like, what? You have old textbooks just laying around? She's like, yeah. I'm like, why? She's like, they let us take them home.
Well, a lot of times, so, too, here's the skinny.
The skinny.
As I can talk about it from my, since I'm a teacher, sometimes they get rid of an edition.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, you're supposed to get rid of them and they package them up and send them to some, you know, podunk district in Wyoming that has no textbooks.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes those get misplaced, you know, because I believe that I will admit that I have a couple of teacher's editions that probably should have went to Wyoming, but I kept.
I mean, you have an excuse, though, because you're an actual
teacher. Right?
Yeah, she's not right. She's not a second grade student anymore, so.
True.
So I don't see her excuse anymore.
All right, well, let's talk about another comment that you have.
Sure.
Nobody can eat 50 eggs, and there's been six different volumes, correct?
Yep, I just got my seventh done, and I'm working on my eighth.
Okay, so what? Give us a quick synopsis of what that particular book is.
That's the one I started in college.
Okay.
It's just like a photocopied thing, and it's kind of gone through different incarnations, I guess is a good word. You know, start off. You know, I went to CCAD, started off with a lot of CCAD-based humor. Then my friends started submitting stuff, so I got real dirty for a couple issues, you know, because I couldn't, like, censor my friends.
Right, no.
You know, not that I wanted to take it in that place. And then, you know, I got out of school, and it was just kind of like whatever ideas I had. And then, it was going to be a webcomic, so I had a lot of, for Zuda, I thought I was going to get it in as a webcomic. So I had all this material that nobody ever saw, and I'm like, why not I'll make a book out of it, you know? So I made a book in color with all this old material and a couple new comics. So that was the first issue for the new incarnation
of it. So it's kind of a hodgepodge, if you will. There's a little bit of this,
like,
a little bit of that.
You know, some issues are just nothing but comics.
Sure.
Some I try to get like written text pieces,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what I'm trying to get more into, because I find I can get more done if I just write it than if I have to, like, draw it all. You know, that pesky drawing and coloring and stuff.
Well, I know one...
But if I could just write it all down in a prose context, I can get more done.
So I know one of the recurring particular pieces in Nobody Can Eat 50 Eggs is the kind of, I don't know what to call it, like a Justice League parody?
That was in one of them. Number five.
Number 5.
That was a reoccurring one.
Reoccurring one. All
right. I ran out of ideas for them for the time being, but they, you know, I like it because it's if an idea pops in my head, I can have it drawn in a day, and I'm like, all right, here's another page for the next book. You know, it could be anything. That's what I like about it. I'm not set with any characters, but I'm not limited by that.
Sure,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if I think of a good idea, it's like, hey, it makes me laugh. It's going in.
In those Justice League parodies, by the way, though, you're awful harsh on Aquaman.
Now, well, Aquaman deserves it. You know.
Wait a minute. Time out. Now, wait. Whoa, stop.
Nobody likes Aquaman.
Wait a minute. Now, time out. I think Aquaman is a far superior underwater superhero than, say, Namor the Submariner.
No, no, no. Namor's cool because he, well, first he's from Marvel, so that gives him a little bit cooler. But you know, Namor, he's kind of like, he's like the bad boy, you know. Like he's got, you know, Sue Storm, you know, he's macking on chicks, you know, he's got a lot of anger issues. Aquaman, at least the version I make fun of. I don't
right,
make fun
sure.
of the
brooding, Peter David. Yeah, the Peter David version of Aquaman.
The brooding,
was badass, so
you know,
yeah.
One-handed Aquaman.
Yeah.
You know, if I guess I don't consider him Aquaman, you know.
Really? Okay.
I don't
for
the, know.
For those at home,
I guess I'm not educated enough on Aquaman. So.
Well, I'm not either. I mean, look, I will admit that I liked Aquaman, especially the Peter David run. Time and Tide was
okay.
a really good miniseries, and his run on that.
See, I haven't
really
read
good.
A lot of them, so I guess I shouldn't talk.
And
too much
he has
about
one
him.
Hand, people at home, because he lost the hand, if I remember correctly. Didn't a barracuda or something ate it? And so he has a spear on his.
I remember
on
he had a spear, and then it was it's kind of like a harpoon because
yeah,
there
was like
a
harpoon spear.
It was
yeah.
like a cable or something attached to it or something.
Yeah,
and then wasn't I don't know. I'm not up on my current comics, but doesn't he have or he did before the reboot have like a water hand or it was like a I don't know. I saw a cover one time that made it look like he had a water hand.
I think he did. He had like
something
some
like
type
that.
Of yeah, weird,
but I never
like
I said, I'm kind of behind. Every once in a while, I go on Wikipedia and just try to like catch up on storylines, so
that's,
I'm not totally.
That's, yeah, that's what I.
Behind.
That and Newsarama. Otherwise, I'm a little
bit
lost.
Like,
yeah,
like
I'm
what's
with you.
Going on now?
I'm with
what
you.
Are we doing?
All right, let's talk about another one of your creations, Gerbil and Apocalyptic Wasteland.
Yes, that's the one everybody likes to look at the cover and then they look at the interior and they put it back down.
Really, it's not a hot seller.
Compared to some of them, I guess it is, but my wife and I always joke about that. You know, Last Space, you know, I thought, oh, this is going to be a pretty cool idea. It's about a gerbil. It's like Mad Max times. And, you know, and my end of the world synopsis is the Canadians, come in from the north and just start wiping everybody out. And, in order to stop the Canadians, the U.S. detonates some nuclear bombs, like in the Midwest and stuff to like halt their impending
progress.
Advance.
Yeah, okay.
So it's about a gerbil in this vast radioactive wasteland. He rolls around in his little gerbil ball. And he's like, I don't, he's like Clint Eastwood in gerbil form. So he's got like a shotgun somewhere in his ball. I don't, you know, it's hidden there somewhere. And in the first, my intention was to make more issues, but I haven't got there yet. But in the first issue, he's waylaid by some you know,
Lord Humongous like character.
Yeah,
yes, he
yeah.
is very much.
Yeah, you know, some kind of parodies from Mad Max or like other post-apocalyptic kind of guys, and they end up kind of like being his compadres at the end. So further issues, you know, if I get to them, will be like, you know, he and his kind of posse on their adventures.
Obviously you were inspired by the Mad Max films. Mm-hmm. Are you a fan?
You know, I'm a fan. Even, you know, I'm not a fan of even the one with Tina Turner, Beyond the Thunderdome.
Beyond Thunderdome,
that was the,
yeah.
But it's got a soft spot in my heart, because that was the first one I watched. And
okay.
You know, and I was a kid, I'm like, Dad, what's up with this? You know, like, I didn't get there was two movies before it.
Yeah, okay.
So we, you know, we go to the video store. We didn't even have a Blockbuster. We just had a local, you know, video
store.
Oh,
yeah,
store.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So we
Did
just
they
go.
Have the back room?
Yeah. This one actually didn't. You
okay,
know?
All right, well. Yeah.
This was a family operation. But no.
Hey,
no.
Man.
I think there's
hey,
enough, there's another
sex
one in
sells.
Town.
Today. Sex sells.
The one near the college had that one. We went to the one on the other side of town. You know, and, you know, I started getting into it more, but, you know, just kind of that, just like the 80s-ness of it.
Yeah,
is,
sure.
Is the
yeah.
allure of it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I'm with you.
My wife had never watched them. Like, all right, we're watching them. We're going to skip the first one. But we're going to watch the second one and the third
Wait,
one.
Wait, why'd you skip the first one?
She would not like the first one.
Is it because of the dog?
She's not much into violence. Unless it's got like a kitschiness to it.
Okay.
So all I'm right. like, all right, She'll like the second one because it's got that little animal kid in it with the boomerang.
Yeah,
she'll
sure.
get a kick out
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. And then the one with Tina Turner and Thunderdome, she'll definitely like that one. But the first one's a little too gritty for her taste,
okay.
I think.
All right. Gotcha.
And even me, I like the more cartooniness of the second two, I guess, or the...
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a good word, but you know what I'm kind of saying.
It's accurate, because since the new one's coming out here in a few weeks.
Yeah, I'm interested. Hopefully it's good.
Man, if you read up on that, it was an adventure to make that movie.
I thought it was going to be out a long time ago, and I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Because there was a trailer a while ago for it.
Yeah, and apparently they started filming, and then there was casting issues, and then at one point they were filming somewhere in Africa, and the whole country went into civil war. They had to leave, like, George Miller. You know, it was a big mess. You should read up on it. It's
pretty
interesting.
I gotta check that out.
But
hopefully it's not as bad as the RoboCop remake. I was not a fan.
I did not see, but I've heard
it's on. I saw it on Netflix on the streaming, so I did not pay money besides the streaming fee to watch it. And that's another one, like the 80s. It lost its 80s-ness. Like the 80s, I liked. They had the fake commercials in it. All the bad guys were like these outlandish punks, that were all strung out on, what was that? Nuke. That was the drug.
Yes.
You know, it kind of lost that. And that's what appealed to me for those kinds of... And that's same with, like, Mad Max. You know, like, Tina Turner's awesome hair. You know, the guy riding around on his, son that's a giant, brute. You know? Just that kind of, like, cool outlandishness of the 80s that is lacking in our cinema. You know? And it's kind of hard to find that. Or like the Labyrinth, that kind of stuff, just, I love that kind of, it's all like CG'd up and all slick, and it's like, I don't know, I guess I'm getting nostalgic in my old age for all that stuff.
No, I think it's what you, it's what you grew up with, is what you're familiar with, and it always has a special soft spot in your heart, I mean, I think that's the, like, for an example, the Star Wars films, which we're going to talk about. You have a vulgar and tasteless Star Wars parody, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. But, with the Star Wars films, I think that's I do not like The Phantom Menace. I don't like, Revenge of the other ones were okay, But, for me, I'm the original because that's what I grew up with. And I think
I relate. I was kind of like, I don't know. Like, the original, there's always, like, a soft spot. And that's another one, like... I watched them out of order as a kid. I watched them kind of. I watched Return of the Jedi first, and then I went backwards. I watched. So that also kind of messes me up in terms of like talking about it.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. Like you talk to some people, they hate Ewoks, but to me, the Ewoks were like they came first, so I can't hate on them too much.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Plus, I was like six, and they were pretty cool when you were six. They're like these little because they were bears, but they were kind of like. My size, and they were like kicking ass, like I think that's kind of like the appeal to like kids about it, but like you watch it as like a teenager and you watch Return of the Jedi, you're like, what's up with these weird Ewoks running around?
Why can't heavily armored stormtroopers defeat them?
Touched on in my comic, because you think about it, it's like they're wearing armor but they're getting beaten by rocks. Like, it makes no sense. They have these giant AT-ST walkers, I think that's the technical term for them. All they have to do is just step on them. Like, what? Like, they're just these little runty bears.
Okay, well, let's talk about...
And they can't hit anybody with their guns. Like,
Well,
they shot one Ewok, like, the whole time, and I think it was an accident.
The blaster just went off.
Yeah,
he was cleaning it.
And there,
he was
there was, like, another one by it that survived. Like they weren't even good enough to kill two at once.
All right, well, let's talk about vulgar and tasteless Star Wars parodies.
Yeah.
So, why did you decide to go this route?
That was another one. I had an idea. My original idea was warning. I like warning signs is a reoccurring thing in my 50 eggs. Like warning signs.
Right.
Your dog is rich was one. Warning signs.
Right. That was a good one.
Warning signs. Your boss is a alien. I think was one. I've done them through the years. It's an easy. I wouldn't say easy, but it's good. It's an easy way for me to like tackle a concept and like present it.
Sure.
And I had one out of the blue. I don't even remember how I got it. I was probably influenced by some Star Wars on TV or something, and I got this one like warning signs: your sister's banging Chewbacca,
which is my favorite part of, of that book.
And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, oh, I got to make this, but it didn't really fit with 50 eggs. 50 eggs doesn't deal with a ton of pulp pop culture to have, I felt like it would just kind of come out of the blue. Uh-huh. Like, all of a sudden, you're, like, reading something about, again, like, Aquaman, and all of a sudden, you're like, oh, man, Chewbacca's banging my sister. So I thought, well, if I can come up with a couple more ideas, I'll really get serious about it. And then I came up with one, there's a comic in there about the famous Tauntaun scene where they have to slash the Tauntaun open to save Luke's life. You know, he's out in the Hoth wilderness. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if a guy stumbled upon that scenario and totally misinterpreted what was going on?
Right, yes. And, that is very good.
So I had a bystander, the Hoth Game Warden, come up on a snowmobile. And he thought Han was going to have sexual relations with the dead Tauntaun. And so I'm like, all right, this has got to be reality. Plus a selfish side of me, you know, I'm kind of new to the convention scene. It's something I'm dipping my toe into last year was my first space.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm going to see how people respond to it. Like, is this something, you know, I should maybe think about more, like doing, I want to say recognizable characters, putting my own like Mad Magazine parody.
Sure, yeah, no.
Some pop, instead of just trying to come up with my own kind of concepts to just kind of like, I want to say piggyback, but, you know, put my take on it as like a satirist or a parody.
Sure.
And I'm like, I got to make it dirty. You know, there's been so many parodies about Star Wars. I got to make it at least something people haven't seen before.
And was it like, well received at Extra Space? I mean, was it where it debuted or no?
That was the debut. I had it printed since December, January. So I've had it laying around for a couple months, and nobody really, you know, I'm off to other projects, so it's not like something I am like shoving in people's faces. But so that was the first time people had seen it besides my wife and me. And yeah, there was people. That was actually the first one I sold. Some woman just came up, slapped money down, picked it up, and left. She didn't like talk thumb to me. Or
she didn't thumb through it or anything. Wow. All right.
I think she thumbed through it earlier and just like came back around as like, all right, cool, thanks.
Well, good then. Good. I'm glad it was a success.
So it's
man.
Something, yeah. You know, I'm going to try to get one. I had some Lord of the Rings ideas, and if I have enough, I'm going to try to get one out. Lord of the Rings, vulgar parodies. By space in July.
Okay, so, all right, something to look for.
Because honestly, I'm not a fan of the Peter Jackson films. We could go into that. I don't think they're good. So
okay,
they deserve. Right. They need to be taken down. I'm ready.
Okay, I'm gonna leave that to you because I'll be very.
Like them?
Well, but I'm not, and I've never read The Hobbit. I've never read any of his work.
No,
so
fair
to
enough.
Me, it to me, I would say I'm like the mass market that you know what
well,
I mean. But I understand where you're coming from because I've ranted many times on this podcast, G.I. Joe.
Like, that was another one.
G.I. Joe for me is sacred, you know, and what they've done so far, and I've never seen the second movie because I refuse to, because the first one was that awful, you know, and to me, so I can get where you're coming from. And like, I've had other people that have not been big G.I. Joe fans go.
That are kind of the opposite.
Yeah, they're like, well, the movie was okay. It wasn't great, but you know, and I, well, to me, it just.
To me, like the first Lord of the Rings was really good. Actually, I really liked it. And then the Two Towers. There's just something with Peter Jackson. His movies just drag on too much.
Yeah.
And I think that was my biggest beef about it. Like I always say, people I talk to this about don't see it, but he uses slow motion too much for me. Like slow motion to me, when you have a 3-hour movie, is like agony, you know? It's like, you don't need slow motion. Like there was a scene in the Two Towers where they're going in and there's like the king of, I forget the region, but it's got the worm tongue is like just strained his spirit, and he's like a husk of a man, and it's like slow motion. They're pushing the doors open and making it real dramatic. Like, you don't need all this. Save the dramatic part for the actual dramatic parts of the movie.
Open and the doors and just go.
I like his intention. Like, he wanted to make it close to the books. You know, as possible, and he really got into like all the, you know, the scenery and the costumery and all this stuff. But it just drug on. Or like the last movie, like there's just endings tacked on, and that's one I wish he would have been more, more faithful to the book. Like in the book, the hobbits. The cool thing I liked about it is the hobbits are now badasses, and they go back to the Shire, and there's some like hoodlums running around the Shire, you know, making
mischief.
Mischief, you know. Yeah. They're tearing their hobbit brothers down, but now they have the confidence from this trek, like, oh no, we're back, you know. And they don't need Gandalf to help them. They don't need, you know, Aragorn or a whole army. All they need is, you know, they don't even need a magic ring. They're just like, no, you're done, man. And they just, you know, they go in and they clean them out, which I thought was, like, that's pretty cool. Like, they start, like, it's, I like that at the beginning they're like, oh, they're just worried about breakfast. And they're like, you know, they're, and they actually got the courage, mm-hmm. you know. And that's something appealing. I think that's one of the main appealing things, you know, like, why a lot of, you know, like, I read it when I was 13 or 14, 12, somewhere in that region. I think that's appealing for, like, you know, boys going right in, and women, girls going into adulthood, you know, because you see that journey and gaining that confidence as, you know, it's almost like a metaphor, like, now they're adults,
right?
I guess.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So I think that was kind of like that got lost in just the big fight scenes, I guess.
Yeah,
which are cool and all, but and the Hobbit, I'm not a big fan of splitting it. I know he probably did it like the studio's like, oh, we need three Christmas blockbusters from you, so we got to stretch this Hobbit.
Yes,
out.
And that's the big complaint many people have on that movie. And again, I haven't seen those. I've seen the three Lord of the Rings, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the Hobbit.
I recommend, if you, for anyone out there, there was an animated Hobbit that I, again, I'm biased because I grew up with it before I even read The Hobbit. But it was an animated, I think it's from the late 70s or early 80s, Hobbit movie that, if you find it, you can probably just search it on YouTube and
sure,
you can probably watch it for free now.
Yeah.
But that's my favorite version of any Tolkien. Like, I like that better than the books, to tell you the truth. But again, that was unbiased because that's the first, you know, exposure I ever got to really any fantasy. Like, you know, I was probably like 7, 8. So again, I'm biased. Take it with a grain of salt. I'm very biased for 80s you know, nostalgia out.
The only thought that's going through my mind, Steve, is I was like, wow. At 12 or 13, he read Tolkien, and I was reading, like, wrestling's greatest grudge matches. That's what I was stuck with. Anyways, so clearly your literature tastes
mine. It's gone downhill after that, so let me tell you.
All right, let's talk about another comic that you had mentioned earlier.
Sure.
On, The Crocodile Man. So you have Everyone Laughs at the Crocodile Man.
Yeah, that was my first effort to make a web comic. Like, all right.
Okay.
Web comics is where it's at, you know.
Sure.
I'm going to get famous doing a webcomic. You know, it's going to be that easy. I'm going to post it on there, and it's just going to be, you know, just hordes of adoring fans.
Before
you know,
Adult Swim will be calling.
That's
you'll
right,
turn
yeah.
it into an animated series. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's harder. It takes a lot of dedication.
Okay.
For one thing, for me to do just one character.
Okay.
Because my mind's always wandering. I get bored. I don't know if I have ADD or what. But, you know, I get different ideas. So it took me a long time to make it. I made about 70 comics altogether. And again, I had a foray into Zuda with it. That was my first thing I got on Zuda. And a lot of the people on there, the comments were, you know, they weren't a big fan of the art. Which, looking back, I'm not a big fan either. And, you know, and I respect their opinion. A lot of them were coming from, like, superhero comics, you know, DC, you know, Vertigo. So, and that's not, you know, my style is very cartoonish. And so I got that too. But I'm like, all right, so I'm going to really try to improve my art on it and just improve all of it. So I went back to the drawing board and I started retooling it. And I got it looking way better, I think. I think I got a better product. And then I had nothing to do with it. Like I started posting it. I got my own, you know, domain name and I started posting them a couple years ago. And I just got bored doing it, and you know, like, I'm not a good self-promoter. You know, I put on my Facebook, hey, check out my new comic, you know, a couple people might check it out, which is cool, but I just kind of lost interest in that again, and then I started posting them again on just like a free it's called Webtoons, and it's like they call it a challenge league, but you know, I'm just doing it just to see, mm-hmm. you know, get my name out there. I have all these comics laying around, you know. I did publish them into a book, but I think I've sold maybe one in the last 3 years.
What kind of is the summary of Crocodile Man?
A Crocodile Man, he's a crocodile man.
For lack of a better term.
Anthropomorphic crocodile man that's kind of like, he can't talk, so he's silent. So it's kind of like he's got a job like a regular Joe would have, you know, in a cubicle. It's kind of
Is it Dilbert inspired a little bit, or Office Space inspired a little bit?
More, I'd say more Office Space.
Okay.
And so, like, his coworkers will talk at him. He's got, like, this kind of vulgar ladies' man. You know, he thinks he's, like, a player, you know, ladies' man. So he plays into it. He takes Crocodile Man, like, on dates and tries to hook him up with women. You know, he's got, like, one coworker hates his guts and reports him to HR because he's eating rats at his desk, you know. And then a lot of them, I start off with, like, just, like, single page. Another goal of mine wasn't to do, like, a lot of web comics I studied were just, like, four panels. I'm like, I'm going to do eight panels. I'm going to try to get at least two semi-funny things in each comic, you know.
Okay.
I'll be honest. Not all of them are, like, drop-down funny, hilarious comics. But I try to get at least two humorous, interesting things. Maybe interesting is a better thing.
Yeah, unique things.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things that would make you want to read it, hopefully. And then I started doing, like a storyline of, like, four comics. So I have, like, eight, about, like, two rows of four comics, like a grid like that. And then there's, like, one where, again, he goes to, like, a frat house. His coworker takes him to a frat house to try to meet chicks. So that's, like, a four-page story. There's one he gets a crush on the receptionist that turns out to be the boss's daughter. So there's that thing. Like, they go on a date. Like, she's trying to get back at her dad. And then as it goes, I try to make it, I don't want to say darker, but, like, his crocodile nature kind of takes over. And it ends the first season, quote unquote, that I have done. It ends where he actually ends up killing his boss. You know, he gets, like, this fit of reptile rage. And so then the next season, I have it all written. I haven't started drawing it yet, where he's in jail now for this crime. So it's going to be his adventures in jail. And there's going to be stuff like the warden's out to get him, or, like, everybody thinks he's a badass because he's a crocodile man.
Please have something in there about him making toilet wine, because that's awesome.
There's
toilet wine equals ratings.
There's no toilet wine, but they find out there's a conspiracy that they're selling the asbestos in the walls of the jail as a drug that's killing. Yeah, it gets kind of bizarre. Like, the warden, like, he gets in with this undercover agent in the jail that's trying to figure out what the warden's doing, and they're actually taking asbestos and crushing it into a powder and portraying it as a drug to the inmates. But they're just trying to, like, get rid of all the asbestos in the wall. It gets kind of bizarre. And it gets pretty, again, I have a soft spot in my heart, but it's just one of those things. It takes a lot of commitment for me to, like,
concentrate
on one character. So,
okay, well, let's talk about one more character. I mean, you have a lot of comics on your website there, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but Colonel McTaggart.
Yeah, he's another one. I invented him in high school.
He seems like that would be the kid-friendly book, if I may say so.
He is kid-friendly.
Okay.
And so far, he's not calling
anyone a whore in this in these books. Okay.
No. Or
eating their bosses
or anything like that.
Yes,
he is kid-friendly. Okay. He's one. I don't know even where. He started as a sketch in high school, and I started drawing him, and I was real into, like, Tintin and, like, these different kind of comics I was finding at the time. And so I was kind of basing him off of, like, this kind of adventurer. Like, he was not a superhero. But when I first invented him, at the time I thought this was cool. Now, looking back, I think this was just a horrible idea. He just talked to you. Like, he talked to the person reading it, like, breaking the fourth wall. But I tried to make it seem like you were in the jungle with him on, like, an adventure.
Okay.
And looking back, I thought that was a bad idea, so I gave him a sidekick, which is this guy called February, that he gets on him because he was in the Navy and Colonel McTaggart was in the Army, so he makes fun of the Navy quite a bit. And the first, there's a lot of material I have, but the first color, you know, nice ones on my website are very kid-friendly. Some of the other ones I have, like, you know, I go into, like, his wife died and he's, like, drinking at a bar. Like, a lot of, like, angsty, like, teen angsty inspired ones, I guess you could say. The ones I have now, I'm like, nah, forget all that crap. He's just going to be, like, this fun, kid-friendly guy in the jungle, you know, with his sidekick. And there's, you know, colorful animals and, you know, there's, like, a monster in some of them.
Well, there you go. You got a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
For everyone. There you go.
So, yeah, I try to, like, you know, I'm very conscientious of who my audience is when I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And just trying to experiment and just, you know, I don't know. I guess I don't want to be pegged in as just one guy because I have, you know, lots of ideas that.
You have Star Wars comics that have people banging Wookiees, so I see where you don't want to be typecast, so to speak.
Yeah, there was one. I had another one that people. It's not a comic. It's a how-to book, illustrated how-to book, How to Befriend Raccoons.
I have that down.
Yeah, my bestseller so far. There's a woman. I have them on Etsy in my store and shop. And there's a woman, and I found the one person in the world that would want these books. She's a raccoon. She saves raccoons at like a raccoon saving place. I don't know. Somewhere a rescue. There you go.
Please, that's gotta be on the West Coast. I'm going to be stereotypical.
It's in Texas, actually.
Texas? Ooh, wow.
At least
really?
That's where I sent them to. And
I would have figured there would have just been a shotgun slung right to that raccoon. There would be no rescuing him.
That's what I thought.
You know, like, hey, Jeb, there's a raccoon out back.
it's a parody about why you should befriend these vicious raccoons. And basically, the raccoon will make your life a living hell to let you befriend it. Like, it will make you pour urine on yourself, and it will defecate. If it even lets you into your house, it will defecate everywhere in a show of dominance. So, and she got a big kick out of it, and you know, that's all that counts. But that's kind of where I'm trying to go, more to like illustrated humor books.
Okay,
I'm trying that. Like, I got comics going on, but I have these. I've got a choose your own adventure. I know that's a copyright-written thing, and I will change that. But
no, but those were the deal back in the 80s, man.
There was ones. There were Dungeons & Dragons brand. They were called Endless Quest.
Okay.
And I got real nostalgic for them. Again, my theme of 80s nostalgia. And so I got some on eBay, or not eBay, Amazon, for like a penny each. It was more, it was like $2 to ship it. And I'm like, I don't care. It's only like a penny. That more than makes up for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote my own a about this warrior that's in a bar. He's just like this alcoholic barbarian warrior that goes on this crazy night, and he ends up in this dungeon. And they're swearing and drinking and violence. So it's basically this vein of these choose-your-own-adventure, they were called the Endless Quest books, but revamped for my tastes as an adult. It's basically just my love letter for myself. If some other people like it, hopefully I'm going to try to have it out by the fall. I have a rough draft written, and I got to illustrate it and do the cover and everything. But,
were you bummed when you picked the wrong page number to go to? When you were like, yeah.
Sometimes.
I had several that were G.I. Joe, and it was like, Storm Shadow.
I've never seen the G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah, and they had ones for G.I. Joe. And you would turn, and you were like, oh, he killed me.
I learned after a while, you always got to, like, kind of keep your thumb so you could go back and find and choose the right path. You wouldn't have to, like, flip and try to search. Because that was always the big pain. It's like, oh, man, I don't remember where I was. So you almost got to start at the beginning
and
go through all that stuff you read.
Yeah.
So I learned young that always keep, like, your thumb or, like, a bookmark. And then test the choice out, and then, you know, like, all right, cool, I'm safe. And so I try to put stuff like that in this book, not as much as what I'd like, but you know, kind of like, you know, oh, sucks to be you. You died. You know, like, you know, kind of playing that up. Like,
well, can we talk about something else that I saw on your store Envy website? So you have sculptures.
Yeah,
so
I got.
Do you sculpt these particular characters?
I'm not good enough to sculpt things to make them look like actual things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, these creatures
I can make them out of my head, but if you give me, like, a character sheet to follow, I quickly lose interest and I give up.
Because I was going to say, the ones that I thought were cool were, did you have Aqua Dude Party Tar, which was like
he's like a frat boy Minotaur.
Yeah. Banana Clops.
Banana Clops is my favorite.
And Arm Wrestle Snail.
Arm Wrestle Snail was an actual character I made for a story I'd like to get to someday, but I have yet to to get to. I made up I have a concept for a guy that I was never into Pokemon, but I like the concept of having all these little monsters.
Mm-hmm.
So I made up my own. don't want to call them Pokemon because they don't look like Pokemon, but my own like monster toy. I don't want to give away too much yet because the story will change, but I have a lot of character designs for a story.
And Armor Snail was one of them.
And hopefully he actually makes it into a real story someday.
So what are they made out of, may I ask? I kind of briefly researched
it's just polymer clay. Okay. It's like sculpted. Right. You can go to like Michael's and get it.
Sure, sure.
You know, you make like an armature and just kind of sculpt it and sand it. And it's just something I did. You know, I used to sketch a lot, and I ran out of room to store all my sketchbooks, so I just started sculpting at night for a while.
Oh, that's cool.
And I got real into it, and I've been trying to sell them for a while, and people like them, but they won't buy them.
Yeah, well.
So they're in a box in my closet right now.
You got to find the right guy. or girl. You know, whatever. All right, last little thing here is we'll start wrapping things up. Do you hate squirrels?
I hate squirrels.
I got the inference. So do I. Why do you hate squirrels? Let's talk about why we hate squirrels.
Well, actually, at Extra Space, I actually had a little mini comic called Why I Hate Squirrels from an old comic I made for... I'll give a shout-out to Dan Taylor of Weird Muse. He's a cool guy. If you're anyone at Space, he'll be at Space. Real good guy, real supportive to all indie comics people. And so I did a comic... this would have been like 2007 probably, for one of his anthologies about why I hate squirrels. And I found it. I'm like, oh, this got to be shared. So I just made it into a mini comic. And basically, I hate them. They tried to kill me. They put a nut under the throttle of my car, and they made me look like an idiot in front of the mechanic because I thought my car was going crazy. And, you know, it was just like revving up and like going by itself. Like it was going up to like 40 miles per hour by itself. And, you know, you step on the brake and you could hear it like struggling. And I'm like, oh crap, I got to go to the mechanic right now.
You have Christine. You're driving Christine.
I'm like,
yeah.
I just got this car like a year ago. Something's going on. And so I go there like, yeah, we found a nut. And I'm like, that was it? And I'm like, and I felt really small. And it actually happened again. And I knew I went in and I found the nut actually. So
I hate them because they destroy things.
They
man.
Do destroy they, things. They plot. They're plotters.
Yeah, I mean, man, like in Westerville, we have a lot of squirrels, and let me just tell you right now, they will chew up anything.
Gray ones or red? I found red ones are the most devious.
These are gray.
Gray ones.
Okay, so all right.
There's tiers. Black ones. I haven't had much experience with the black squirrels, but I have. So they're probably pretty cool. But the gray ones and the red ones, I definitely don't like.
Yeah,
but,
I don't like them.
Flying squirrels are probably pretty cool, like Rocky and Bullwinkle. Like Rocky.
I think those are rare. There's none of those in Westerville, I can tell you that right now.
So I guess I shouldn't lump all squirrels, but red squirrels and gray squirrels definitely on the shit list. And my wife adores squirrels.
I'm going to get hate emails from like groups that are like integrate squirrels into society.
My sister actually got me a squirrel t-shirt. And I'm like, I'm not wearing this. You want this on? I will not wear squirrel attire.
I mean, I'm just telling you, like, they've chewed up. I used to have a chain link fence, and they would chew on the top of the chain link fence. Yeah,
wow.
To file down their teeth. Got rid of that fence because it fell apart. It put up a brand new wood fence. They've chewed on the top of the wood, the wood panels. I have one of those Rubbermaid storage containers all around the base of it. They've chewed on the plastic.
You got them bad.
They're assholes.
I've never seen them chew that much. I'm basically don't like them because of the nuts. And they used to get in the walls in my old apartment. Oh. So I'd hear them. And I used to work nights, so they'd always wake me up, like, running around.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, I saw a gray squirrel eat a baby bird one time.
What?
Yeah, that was in the comic. It was during college, and we were out at the park by the main library there, Deaf School Park. And, you know, I was just sitting there. I was supposed to draw or paint something, but I wasn't. I was just looking at stuff, and I see the squirrel, and I watch him, and he runs over to this baby bird that had fallen on the ground. He picks it up by the head and runs off with it.
Wow,
that's see, nature is harsh.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, you should join our quest. Hate squirrels.
Hate all squirrels.
There you go.
And actually, there's...
that should be a hashtag.
And I repeated that theme the back of my 150 eggs, where there's a lot... The joke was... Warning signs, your dog is rich again. And one of the warning signs is your dog formed a lobby group against squirrels. And so I actually made a fake ad for the lobby group, the anti-squirrel lobby group funded by your dog. So call your politicians, support our lobby.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about where folks can check out your stuff. So you do have a store, Envy?
Yeah, I have a store, Envy. It's mulletturtle.storeenvy.com, or if you just Google Mullet Turtle, there's no other Mullet Turtle out there.
Okay,
gotcha. Mullet Turtle Comics. I also have an Etsy. Okay. I don't have everything on my Etsy because they actually charge you to have stuff on there, which I'm not a big fan of. So I'm just kind of dipping my toe in and seeing, you know, if I get any response on anything. And Crocman, he's on Webtoons. If you just Google Webtoons Crocman, I've got, I'll have the 8th episode up today. I had him on, there's another site, it used to be called Drunk, I call it Drunk Duck still, it's called The Duck Web Comics. And I had it on there, and I kind of, it's like one of those community sites where, you know, it's free to join. And I got good response from him, but it got buried. So I'm like, because, you know, everybody's posting comics on there every day. Yeah. So it's kind of buried on there. So I'm like, I'll take it down from there and try to find a new audience, too. Sure. Because these people, you know, these people already found it, enjoyed it. And nobody else can see it now. So might as well see if I can find more audience for it.
And you also have your own Tumblr, correct?
Yeah, I have a Tumblr. I just post, I post old comics, mm-hmm. sketches, that mostly just art. I don't post any words.
Okay.
Any of those pesky words.
And that is steve-steiner.
Yeah, steve-steiner. Tumblr.com.
All right.
And also excited, I'll be at Space in July, and I actually got into SPX. I won the lottery.
Really?
I was going to go. It's one of those things on my bucket list. It's like, I always wanted to go, and I'm like, I had little hope I'd get in, but I'm like, I'm going to go either way. I told the wife, you can come if you want. I'm going. I don't care. And actually, I got in. So
excellent, man.
All those people that say the lottery is biased, maybe it is, but nobody at SPX knows me, and I got in. So.
Well, okay, man.
And I'm out of the first time I got
congrats,
in.
Congrats, man.
So I'm planning on taking all the advantage because I probably will never get in again from what I read online.
True. All right, well, Steve, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, it's
been
awesome.
Fun, man. It was a fun episode. And as I mentioned here, before we started this conversation, at the front of this episode of the PVD Cast, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and then I'll be back to wrap things up. So sit tight, and I'll be right back. John Orlando, the host of the PVD Cast. I want to take a few moments to tell you about Stitcher Radio. If you don't know, Stitcher Radio is where you can hear the PVD Cast and thousands of other podcasts that are on the network. Stitcher Radio is the greatest app that you could have on your Android or on your iPhone or on your tablet. If you don't have it, go to your app store and download it, or go to Stitcher.com where they'll tell you how to get Stitcher Radio. It is the greatest. It is the best. It's one app. That's all you need, folks. It will let you know when a new episode's up because it continuously updates. So if you want to know when is the next episode of the PVD Cast up, boom, it'll tell you. Trust me, I know I have friends that have used the app on their particular Android or iPhone, and they love it. They love it. You can get customized recommendations for anything you're interested in, whether it's wrestling, news, entertainment, whatever. Definitely check out Stitcher.com or go to the App Store and pick up Stitcher Radio so you can stay in the know. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Steve Steiner. It was a fun conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed sitting down and just talking with Steve about his creative process, some of the weird things he comes up with, some of the funny things he comes up with. And as a side note, when we were done recording this particular episode and walking to our cars, we started talking a little bit about professional wrestling, and he was curious about my background in it. And we started talking, and here, you know, Steve was a casual fan, he would admit, in the 90s, you know, with Stone Cold and with The Rock. But he mentioned he is really good friends with Bobby Shields. Of course, many of you probably know him from the Cleveland independent scene. Bobby Shields was on Prime Wrestling and PWO for a long time up there, and still wrestles around the northeastern part of Ohio. And so we kind of started comparing a few notes because Steve has gone on some road trips with Bobby Shields, and he kind of knows a little bit about some of the trials and tribulations that we face in the indie professional wrestling world. So overall, really cool dude. You get a chance, check out mallturtle.storeenvy.com. Now, there's a lot of spelling things going on there because you double the T for Mullet Turtle, you don't double the E for Store Envy. I don't, look, easiest thing that he mentioned, and I did it too, just Google Mullet Turtle, and you'll find out how to get in touch with Steve, where to buy some of his cool stuff, where to check out some of his cool stuff and whatnot. So definitely give Steve a little love, if you will. Head on over, check out some of his stuff. I'm telling you, Facts About Weather is an absolutely hilarious book. I was in tears reading it. But nonetheless, I think I got to address it. I think in the last particular episode of this beloved podcast, I threw out my Stanley Cup predictions. Man, oh man, are they wrong. I said the Nashville Predators would come out of the West, and man, this past weekend, they finally got ousted by the Chicago Blackhawks in six games, and I gotta be honest, I didn't think that was gonna happen. But, you know, when you're missing your all-star defenseman, and Mike Fisher was out for a while, who's a very good defensive forward, you know, anything can happen. That's why I love the Stanley Cup playoffs, man. Anything can happen. On paper, that probably wouldn't have happened. Most people would have picked Nashville, you know, but it is what it is. So now, man, I gotta hope that Tampa Bay pulls it out. They still got a couple games left with Detroit, so we'll have to wait and see there, but all right, enough hockey, man. Let's get into Orlando Spades. There you go. You heard the music, ladies and gentlemen. You know, that's how we like to wrap up each and every one of these podcasts, where I throw out something that I think is really cool. And my fave for this particular episode is a favorite television show of mine that about 2 weeks ago came to an end. My fave for this edition is the TV series Justified. Now, it went six seasons, and they just decided to wrap it up. I thought it wrapped up in a very good manner. I think true to the way in which that series pretty much was. And, man, you know what? I'm sad to see it go, but you know what? I appreciate the fact that they go out on top. And I gotta say that, because a lot of television shows, man, they go on and on and on, and they just lose it after a while. I mean, a fine example is Law & Order. That franchise, regular Law & Order, Law & Order SVU, man, those episodes are going on so, so long. In fact, I think I read Law & Order SVU is on its 17th season. Oh, jeez, man. Come on. So, I prefer a series that's really good to go out on a high note, to end early, not to drag on so it becomes some watered-down shell of its former self. So, my fave, Justified. I'm sure that they're probably going to put out a box set, but if you've never seen it, man, you got to. In fact, I think Amazon Prime is showing it. If you go over to Amazon Prime, I think you can get the first five seasons. You know, check it out. If you like a good cop show, Justified's for you. So, all right, with that then, let's get things wrapped up, if you will. I got a couple of places to tell you to get in touch with me. One, of course, is via email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter @pvdmvp. And that's also the same username you'll find me on Instagram, which, you know, somebody said, hey, man, you're not taking too many pictures. I know. To be honest, I don't know. I regret that Instagram. I don't know. But anyways, still, pvdmvp at Twitter, also on Instagram. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wrap things up here. So I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, folks.